Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
He's tied with 15. He has taken the lead. Fly ball left center field. This ought to do it. And out of here. Frazier pumps his fist. Todd Frazier will have a chance to defend his crown. Blast it to left. Way back. On its way. And gone. Man. Rush to left again. 17 homers for Stanton. I mean, they're coming faster than I can do them. Left field is gone again. He's got 16. Make it 17 and a rocket low liner. 18. That one will go to center. Center field again. Is it 19? You bet. What a show Giancarlo Stanton has put on. 20 home runs for Giancarlo Stanton.
When Cleveland Browns running back Isaiah Crowell posted a drawing on Instagram last week showing a police officer getting his throat slashed, we're not even going to show you the image. Now, Crowell took down the post and then yesterday issued an apology through the team. So, on one hand, yes, we want athletes to be authentic and we want them to speak out on social issues. But what happens when they say something that is widely viewed as offensive to their employers and sponsors and even fans of the sport?
Yeah, the immediacy of social media has allowed athletes with just a few keystrokes to have their voice heard on an important topic. But it's also so immediate that you can let the anger or the emotion of a moment take over and make bad decisions like this one. The issue for me, I think, is what the Browns did in response, which is to say, we don't accept just an apology. Your actions need to be louder than the words that you use. You need to go out into the community and make people feel like you've earned, you know, forgiveness.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh my goodness gracious, what a program we've got to do with you today. And I phrase that very, very differently than I normally do. Normally I say what a program we have for you, what an outstanding lineup of guests, etc., etc. Today it's a little bit different. As I reiterate, what a program we've got to do for you today and with you today. It is of some very, very high importance, and it is not something that is necessarily going to be fun to talk about. But it is what it is. It has dominated social media, not just in Ohio, as it is involving a Cleveland Browns player, a running back. It is also a viral story, really, across the country, because, again, we are talking about a National Football League player who has interjected himself into a national debate and discussion about something that I promise you the National Football League wishes he had not interjected himself into. I promise you the Cleveland Browns wish that he had not interjected himself into this particular story either. And that's where we're going to start. Now, I'm going to tell you right out of the gate here on the extravaganza today, and you know this already if you listen to this show with any regularity at all. And we've been on the air almost 2 years now. It'll be 2 years in October that we've been doing the extravaganza. And I often tell you that I believe in the sports world being our respite, our vacation, our toy box, our time away from all of the serious stuff that affects us on such a sometimes deep and personal level. And that's the way I keep it. I try not to bring news stories into my sports program any more than I would bring sports stories into a news program that I host. So I try to keep those separate for just that reason. And when we want to forget about all of the bad stuff in the world, we turn to sports. And I don't want the sports world bringing that bad stuff into it, and then we got to deal with it. But yet that's where we find ourselves today. We find ourselves in one of these rare moments when we do have to talk about the world at large and the sports world's role within it. Specifically, Isaiah Crowell, the Browns' leading rusher from 1 year ago. You might not care about the Browns' leading rusher if you're a Lions fan, and that's perfectly fine, or if you're a Steelers fan or a Bengals fan or a Colts fan or anybody else who might be in this general vicinity of Northwest Ohio. But this goes so much deeper, like I said, and so much farther than the boundaries of a given city or a given franchise's reach toward its fan base. Isaiah Crowell, the Browns' leading running back or a leading rusher from 1 year ago, decided a few days ago, in the wake of some very, very tense times in the United States involving race, black and white, black and police, no matter what race the police officers are, minorities versus law enforcement or just the law itself, it is a very, very difficult time in America. President of the United States has stuck his nose into it, not always for the positive result. The governor of the state of Minnesota has stuck his neck out there, again, not always in the most positive of fashions, given the fact that it was premature and factually inaccurate with the things he said. We'll cover that. And obviously, the sports world has been something that, where it's kind of, and I'm struggling to kind of put this into words, because the sports world has kind of been off limits or thought to be off limits for some of these things through the years. But in recent years, because of social media, it is becoming more and more involved in these various issues. In other words, before the advent of Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, it's very, very doubtful. Too many interviewers would be asking to spend some time talking to Isaiah Crowell in mid or early July and asking him about his feelings on social issues. Chances are nobody's going to do that, because they're going to ask him about, hey, you know, what do you think about your chances this year in the backfield? Are you going to be the starting running back? Is Duke Johnson going to be the guy? Blah, blah. Anybody who talks to him is going to be talking to him about football stuff. And really, at this particular point in time, nobody's going to be talking to him. You know, we're in that period of off season in the National Football League before or after mini camps and OTAs and before training camp starts. We're in that period in July where things will start to get real next month, but not now. Everybody's on vacation pretty much. But because of the advent of social media, because of Instagram in this particular case, the athletes are making themselves heard and they're not always making great choices. And that's where we find ourselves. Now, we know that there was a shooting in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, about a week ago. We know that it was a controversial shooting, two police officers shooting a suspect who had a 911 call made on him because he was reportedly threatening people with a gun. The police officers responded. The individual did not comply with orders. The individual was tempted to be tackled. He's 310 pounds, like trying to tackle Ndamukong Suh or something. But anyway, they tried to take him to the ground, wrestling. After they tried to tase him, and the taser had no effect on this big guy, they tried to take him down. A struggle ensued on the ground. Police officer eventually pulled his gun and shot the individual on the ground. I'm just going to describe it as it was. I'm not going to sit here and say I know all of the details of it, because nobody does, which is kind of the point. Nobody knows the details of what happened as far as the circumstances of that shooting. All they have is part of a videotape and then part of another angle that somebody else took on their smartphone, and that's it. Unfortunately, that was enough for a lot of people to respond and react prematurely without waiting for the results of investigations, for goodness sakes, without waiting for the investigations to begin, let alone end and results to be presented. So that's part one. Part two, another video emerged a day later last week, of a shooting at a traffic stop in Minnesota. And the shooting in that case also featured a video, but this one was after the fact, and it was a narrated video by the girlfriend or fiance of the individual who was driving the car, was shot by a police officer. And the narrative that on the video that was shot after, the video being taken or recorded, the narrative on that video, which is after the shooting occurred, indicated that the individual was shot for, quote, no apparent reason, that he was a concealed carry holder. They informed the officer of that, and that the officer knew, and when he reached for his wallet, the officer just shot him with no apparent reason or for no apparent reason. Now, as you know, this has set a lot of people to protesting across the country. A lot of anger, a lot of accusations of race on the part of police officers being the primary motive for shootings. And there's been a whole lot of violence committed, obviously, against police officers in that aftermath. The most widely known, obviously, incident, of course, 11 police officers shot in Dallas, Texas, 5 of them fatally. Actually, 12, take that back, 12 shot, 5 fatally, 7 wounded. And those services are going on even today as we speak. These police officers, the largest attack, the deadliest day for police in the United States since 9/11, when so many first responders died in the Twin Towers. Those attacks on police were also then followed by ambush attacks on officers in Georgia, in Ferguson, Missouri, and in a couple of other southern cities that I cannot recall at the moment. But when I say ambush-style attacks, I'm talking about what the police chiefs and individuals who are responding to those calls have described as, quite simply, just ambushes. Phony 911 call about breaking into a car to get an officer out there. When the officer gets there, he gets shot. This is what's going on in the United States right now. It is a very, very dangerous time. Police officers have been made to be the enemy by a lot of people. Like I said, including some elected officials, including some very, very, very dangerous people with bully pulpits and a willing and able media ready to share their every word. Regardless of how irresponsible those words might be, regardless of how dangerous those words might be, regardless of how inaccurate or dishonest those words might be, the media is ready to run with them. So police officers have become public enemy number one by so many, in so many movements, most of those movements racially oriented, most of them movements African-American groups, such as the New Black Panther Party, such as the Black Liberation Movement, such as the Black Lives Matter Movement, such as the National Action Network, et cetera, et cetera. Most of them have their origins in those particular areas. Which brings us back to Isaiah Crowell. Isaiah Crowell, in the middle of all of this drama, in the middle of all of this trauma, very different word, only a couple of letters apart, in the middle of all of this, he takes to Instagram and decides to post a picture, an illustrated picture, a drawing, if you will, a work of art, of a man dressed in all black, but with an American flag apparently draped over his shoulders, beheading a white police officer. Isaiah Crowell posted that on his Instagram page with the caption, "Mood, they give polices all types of weapons, and they continuously choose to kill us. Hashtag weak." So apparently, in Mr. Crowell's opinion, police officers are using their weapons to continuously choose to kill black people. And his response to that is, well, the picture shows it. The picture speaks 1,000 words. Beheading white police officers. Now, mind you, this was one day, apparently, before the actual shooting of the 12 people, 11 officers in total in Dallas, Texas. He left that post up long enough, apparently, for at least 33 other subhuman, reprehensible, cop-hating, cop-murdering supporters to click the like button on his Instagram photo. To say that that was not received warmly is an understatement. When this picture hit social media and Isaiah Crowell's comments hit social media, fans of the Cleveland Browns, but also of a lot of other teams, instantly reacted. A poll conducted yesterday and overnight last night on Cleveland.com asking what should be done with Isaiah Crowell, who issued an apology yesterday. One of these apologies, of course, that is written by a combination of an attorney for the team, a publicist for the player, and probably an agent as well, to make sure that they get all of the right stuff in there, which means it is not a sincere apology because it's not his own words. He issued an apology. But the poll said now that he's apologized, and he did take it down, what should happen? 70% of the respondents to that poll online, it's a not scientific poll, obviously, but 70%, 69 point something, so I'm rounding it up to 70%, say he should face the maximum punishment allowable. And presumably that includes being released. Roughly 18% said he should just be fined heavily. 12% say no more punishment. He already apologized. It's over. The numbers don't bear out the anger or the passion. Thousands upon thousands of people have shared that photo and the story on Facebook. Thousands upon thousands of people have shared that story and that photo on Twitter. And people are furious. I'm going to go out here and say what I said online last night when I first heard about this. I didn't even hear about the post originally from Isaiah Crowell. I saw a story online, Browns Crowell to issue apology for offensive or for controversial post, Instagram post. I can't remember exactly what the word was, but I think it was offensive or controversial. But anyway, he was going to issue an apology. I was like, what did he do? So I clicked on the link and I looked at it and there was a picture of it and I thought, oh my God. This was the picture that was planted on the New Black Panther Party's page on their Facebook page for the last several days with captions calling for the murder of white police officers simply because they were A, police officers, and B, white. I said, he just reposted a New Black Panther Party message calling for the killing of innocent cops, like the ones in Dallas. This can't be. In Dallas, Texas, police officers, under gunfire, ran toward that gunfire as the rest of the crowd of protesters ran away. The officers were protecting and defending the lives of a crowd of protesters that were there to protest them as part of a Black Lives Matter crowd. These officers saw a predominantly black crowd protesting them, heard the gunfire, saw some of their own fall, and sprang into action to save the very people, the very minorities that made up that crowd that was there to protest them. That's what police officers do. They try to save people's lives. That's what police officers do. They respond in a time of violence and crisis to save people's lives. That's what happened in Dallas. That's what happens every day. Happens in Toledo, happens in Detroit, happens in Cleveland, happens at every point in between. And here's a professional athlete, a guy whose face is on a trading card that kids have, a guy whose face is on posters, a guy whose jersey might be in stores near you that your kid might want to buy. Kids look up to these athletes. I won't go into the entire Charles Barkley mantra from the 1990s about just because I can dunk a basketball doesn't mean I should raise your kid. I'm not a role model. Because the fact of the matter is, whether you want to be or not, kids look up to you. Ergo, you are a role model. You do something they like. You do something they wish they could do. They want to be like you. Nike made billions off of that very, very fact. Be like Mike. If I could be like Mike. Athletes are role models to these kids. And this particular athlete, despite the fact that police officers put their lives on the line even to protect them on a daily basis, thought that it would be okay to expose his thousands and thousands of Instagram followers, Lord knows how many of whom might be kids, to an image that says, yeah, this is how we deal with cops. They're killing us. Let's cut their heads off. That's what that picture says. I posted that last night. I posted that on Twitter, and it's still there, and I posted it on Facebook, and it has been taken down. Because I violated, according to Facebook, community user standards. And yet they have not given me any reason whatsoever to explain why. Not a word of profanity was used. Not a single threat was issued. Not a single racist word was used. I merely said Isaiah Crowell, like every one of the Cleveland Browns and the Detroit Lions and the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cincinnati Bengals and everybody else, they go to work every day under heavy police protection. The Browns train in Berea, Ohio, outside of Cleveland. Berea police officers guard the Browns headquarters and the parking lot so that no stupid fans can go and harass these people or try to harm these people. Police officers give them heavy protection at work every day. On game day, you know how many cops work at Ford Field on game day? How many work at First Energy Stadium on game day? You know how many cops surround the team bus? You know how many cops are on the team bus? You know how many cops are at the team hotel when they go on the road? You know how many cops provide security for these players every single day? Whose job it is to make sure that no one harms them? Who would take bullets if that's what it took to protect the innocent people that they're working with? Cops provide Isaiah Crowell and every single one of his teammates and every player in the NFL, along with every person in this country, but particularly since we're talking about the public figures, the professional athletes, they provide these guys with security every day. And Isaiah Crowell is going to teach young people and influence Lord knows how many other people that the way to deal with your anger over two police-involved shootings that you still don't have all of the facts about, because the investigations hadn't even begun, let alone ended, your answer to those shootings is to post something that says, beheading cops. Yeah. Look at this. This is how we need to act. This is what we need to do. There's no ambiguity here. There are no two ways to look at that picture that was posted and shared by Isaiah Crowell that originated on the Black Panther, New Black Panther Party website, along with another cartoon drawing that said, when's it time to kill the KKK crackers? Racial hatred, racial divisiveness like you've never seen. Calls to violence. It's bad enough to see those calls to violence from any organization, whether it be the New Black Panther Party or anybody else, to see a professional athlete then share that, as in, yeah, me too, is beyond the pale. So I posted it, and I called on the Cleveland Browns to cut him immediately. Thousands of other people echoed that. I personally know several people who have called the Cleveland Browns and said, I am not renewing my season tickets unless he's gone by the end of business today. People in this country want to unify. People in this country, black and white and virtually every other demographic, whether they be racial demographics, sexual demographics, sexual orientation, religion, people want to unify. It's what we all have to want. And for this horrific gesture to come out of the Instagram account of a professional football player is something that just cannot be tolerated. The apology issued by Isaiah Crowell yesterday was, again, about as insincere as any athlete apology could be. Given the way it was written, given the language chosen, given the vocabulary, which is completely unlike any of the vocabulary he uses in his own postings, and given the fact that we just are not stupid and we know how things work. Lawyers and publicists and agents handcraft these messages and send them out to the media, which means it's not how the player feels at all. Crowell apologized and said he was really, really emotional. Or at least his handler said he was really, really emotional. Because we saw extreme acts of violence against black men, he said, across our country. And then throw in, as well as against police officers in Dallas. I posted an image to Instagram in the midst of that emotion, and I should not have, and immediately removed it. Not immediately. It was up there long enough for 33 people to look at that and say, yeah, me too, and click the like button. It was an extremely poor decision, and I apologize for that mistake and for offending people. My values and beliefs do not match that image. I am outraged and upset by the deaths of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, along with so many others. I am also outraged and saddened that the attacks in Dallas and the deaths on the five honorable police officers, and then their names are listed there, all of this, of course, coming right from the lawyer's typewriter or computer, who were providing protection while trying to keep peace. We have to do better as a society. It's not about color. It's about what's right and wrong. And yet it's not about color, he says, but yet he took something from the new Black Panther page about killing white cops and posted it as an expression of his feelings. I was very wrong in posting that image. Every single life matters. Every death as a result of violence should be treated with equal outrage and penalty. End quote. I'm going to address that bottom part first. Every death as a result of violence should be treated with equal outrage and penalty. No, it should not. Deaths that are a result of violence that is born of a law that is being broken or orders, lawful orders that are not being followed and are born out of self-defense or defense of others should not be treated in the same way as potentially beheading a police officer. They're not equal. The murder of police officers, innocent people in Dallas, Texas, from a rooftop by a member of a number of very, very dangerous organizations. And that's exactly what Micah X. Johnson was, a member of a number of these very racist black nationalist groups that call for the killing of white people. The deaths of white cops at his hands, from above, from rooftops. The statements from that individual to the officer, the negotiator, as they tried to bring that to a peaceful end without another life being lost, including the shooters. That he was driven by the shootings of Sterling and Castile and by Black Lives Matter, and that he wanted to kill white people, particularly white cops. That's not the same. That's straight-up cold-blooded serial-killing murder. Isaiah Crowell has endorsed the execution of cops, a statement of apology written by the team lawyers and publicists does not get it done. The Browns have also said an apology is not enough. He needs to take positive steps to undo the negative damage that he has caused. But at this point, they have no plans to release him. I can tell you this. I have no plans to watch them. Until he is gone, the Browns are done in my eyes. I will not watch on Sundays. I will not discuss them on Mondays on this program. We'll focus 100% on the Detroit Lions. We'll focus on the rest of the teams in the AFC North. We'll focus on all the important storylines when we do Football Mondays. We like to call it a Monday afternoon quarterback. But I will not. I will not pay attention. I will not spend airtime. I will not spend money on the Cleveland Browns until they do what needs to be done. And what needs to be done is to send a message that saying that type of endorsement of violence against innocent people, police officers or otherwise, based on their race or their profession, is not something we will ever tolerate or second. And the only way they can prove that is to get rid of him and send that message to everybody. That needs to happen, and it needs to happen today. Before the close of business, like so many of those season ticket holders who say they are not renewing their season tickets if he's not gone by the close of business today. That is what has to happen. Just as assuredly as it would if some sick, demented player had posted the same type of image of some white person or person dressed in all white executing a black man in the same exact way that this particular person in black was executing this white police officer. Anybody who would post that would be banned from the league immediately. They would be suspended based on the league's personal conduct policy and then probably kicked out of the league. And you know what? It would be correct. It would be the just thing to do. It would be the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do here as well. I'm going to talk about this at 4:05 with Scott Petrak, who covers the Cleveland Browns. Will they release him? Should they release him? Everybody's got an opinion. Every sports writer has got an opinion on it, too. I want to hear your opinions before I get to Scott's. 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. It's a very troubling time in America right now. It has found its way into our sports world. It has found its way onto the courts of the WNBA. And I'll explain that story in just a short while. But it has invaded our sports world and thus our sports radio. Let's talk about it responsibly. Let's talk about it civilly. And let's do it together at 866-240-1065. Right back with you on The Extravaganza.
Relief is as close as your local podiatrist. Podiatric physicians are highly trained doctors who specialize in medical and surgical treatment of the foot and ankle. Ohio Foot and Ankle podiatric physicians are available across the state and are devoted to providing the highest quality foot and ankle care. To find a member of the Ohio Foot and Ankle Medical Association near you, visit associationsadvanceohio.com.
Listen to us live anytime at our website at 1065theticket.com. Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Indeed, we roll on the extravaganza. It is 3:45. Thanks so much for taking the time. I got a lot of people on hold. I want to get right to your phone calls at 866-240-1065. Coming up at 4:05, we're going to talk to Scott Petrak. You get the latest out of Berea in Cleveland. Well, Berea is not in Cleveland. Berea is its own city, but you get the point. To see exactly what the latest is and the feeling there regarding what is going to be done with Isaiah Crowell. Then at 4:35, we're going to shift gears entirely and get back to baseball at the All-Star break as Anthony Fenwick will join us live from San Diego, where he is covering he's covering the game, essentially. But there, of course, with the American League contingent and specifically Miguel Cabrera, the Detroit Tigers representative. All right, so that's coming up in the next hour. For now, let's go back to the phones, or let's go to the phones. Very difficult situation. Let's handle everything as responsibly as we possibly can, because that's what we need to do, I think, right now in this country, is find someone responsible to guide us. Kevin, in Toledo, you are on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing pretty good. Yourself today?
I'm good, sir. What's your take on all of this? What did you think, by the way, when you heard about Isaiah Crowell? Did you see the picture?
I have not seen the picture, but I don't need the picture to realize that, first off, he's an idiot for, you know, doing what he did. Because, I mean, especially the timing of it and everything. Actually, it doesn't matter what time you do that. That was just a dumb idea. By him. But what I will say is this: the outrage that people
Kevin, you're kind of muffled. Are you on speaker or Bluetooth or something today?
Can you hear me better now?
I'll do my best. I just want to make sure everybody can hear you clearly, because it's a little muffled, and if it is for me, it probably is going out over people's radio speakers. So go ahead and give it a shot.
Okay. Well, what I wanted to say, you know, the outrage that people have about what Isaiah Crowell did is the same outrage that the black community has every day when you see something like this on TV happening to black people. And, you know, it's a shame that it has to be this way, but these Black Lives Matter movements and things like that, they come out because of what we see on the TV. And it's getting to the point to where athletes, people who have a platform, need to step up in a positive way and come out and defend what's going on, you know, because we like I say, it's a shame that we always have to wait for the full details to come out when a black man gets killed in America, especially by the hands of the police. And out of all the situations that I've seen recently, and I mean in the past few years, I have not seen any situation where the black man deserved to die You know, there's other tactics that you can take. And for you to cold blood shoot and kill a black man or any man, that's wrong. So we get tired of seeing police officers get off left and right after they kill a black man. So that's why I said what Isaiah Crowell did was totally wrong. But that is the same frustration that black America has with seeing police officers get off every day left and right. And that's really all I wanted to say. I enjoy listening to your show, and I'm going to continue to listen. You have a great day.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate your phone call. And you are a very loyal caller and a very loyal listener, and I appreciate that, too. I would respond by asking a very simple question. I'll ask it hypothetically for anybody to answer. What is it that we have seen that has enraged the black community so much? And that's a big part of this. What really struck me about Kevin's call right there was when he said it's a shame that we have to wait for all the investigation to come out. And I think I said, wait a second. That's not the shame. What's a shame is when people don't wait for the results of the investigation to come out. That is what leads to so much of the violence. People don't wait to find out the facts. People think they know the facts because they see part of a video. And they have no idea what they just watched. They have no idea of the context, and they have no idea, quite frankly, about what the rules of policing are. That's a big part of this. For example, the situation in Minnesota that has so many people upset, myself included. When I first watched that video of the death of Philando Castile, I thought to myself, what on earth could have made him do this? The officer, that is. What on earth could have scared him so much that he freaked out and reached into his holster and pulled his gun out and shot him? Because I was going by what the rest of America was going by. A couple of minutes of taped narration from the passenger who was telling us what had happened. And people not having anything else to go on without any results of any investigation just believed that what she said was accurate. And if it was accurate, it is awful. It's horrible. And I'm with you. But in the matter of 48 hours, 48 short hours later, people couldn't wait 2 days before reacting and protesting and screaming and calling for the deaths of white cops, etc. Within 48 hours, more information emerged. He wasn't stopped for a broken taillight the way the narration on the video went. He was stopped because he resembled a suspect that police were looking for in an armed robbery. It was called into the police dispatch by the officer who pulled him over. Said, I'm going to make a stop. It looks like him. He even identified a particular facial characteristic that said, this is why it looks like him. I'm going to stop him and see. Secondly, what we didn't hear, while we did hear the person on the video, the female on the video saying, he's got a concealed carry permit. He told the officer he does. Well, he doesn't. We found it out in 48 hours. He doesn't have a concealed carry permit. The sheriff in that county said he's never even applied for one. That wasn't true. What we also found out from the statement of the officer is that he's not a white cop who shot a black suspect. He is also a minority. He's a Latino. His last name is Yanez, Y-A-N-E-Z. He is full Latino. So it's not a white cop shooting a black suspect. And also within 48 hours, if people would have just waited, you would have also heard the officer's statement that the individual who is deceased at the terrible, terrible, tragic event had his gun visible sitting on his lap on his left thigh and was given an order, at least according to the officer, was given an order, do not move. That's just very simply what anybody who is a legitimate concealed carry holder knows, that if you get pulled over in a traffic stop, you immediately put your hands on the steering wheel and you tell the officer, I'm a concealed carry holder and my weapon is in this vehicle. They will then direct you on what you're allowed to do with your hands and what you're not, because they don't want you reaching for said weapon and shooting them. So in this case, it was visible and he was given a do not move order. He then did move and moved his hands, according to the report, toward his waist or his pocket or whatever. His girlfriend said he was just going for his wallet, for his driver's license. But if you're the police officer and there's a gun on his lap and his hands go down to his pants, maybe he is going for a wallet. Who knows? Are you waiting to find out where this hand grabs wallet or gun? It is a very, very difficult thing to decide. And we have hours and days and weeks to sit here and play it out about what I would have done, what you would have done, what I would have thought. He has to make that decision in a literal half a second, maybe half of half a second. Because if he's wrong and the guy grabs the gun, it's too late. So, did the cop do what was right there? I don't know. Did he murder this person in cold blood? I don't know. So why is it automatically just assumed the latter? And thus, beheading police officers becomes a viral thing on various racist, hate-filled websites that are then being shared by professional athletes. You see what I'm saying? We can't, don't say it's the shame that we have to wait for the results of the investigation. It is what makes it makes us a lawful society, waiting for the results of the investigation. Why did that officer act the way he did? Why did he pull his weapon and fire if all the individual was doing was reaching for a wallet? Let's find out the circumstances. See, that's the part that is so incredibly important for us to bring peace to this country and this community, is waiting for the facts. Let's go to, where are we going here, Jim Cushlin? I see we got six people here, and I don't know who you want me to take first. Dale in Bedford. Dale is up on ESPN 106.5, the ticket. Go right ahead, Dale.
How you doing, gentlemen?
Good, sir.
I agree with you totally, man. Why? It's just terrible. It's terrible. You know what? I'm a white. You know what? I'll tell you what. This new day, I'm white. I'm probably got white, Italian, Irish, a whole bunch of different nationalities probably all wrapped up in me, man. So a lot of us, I don't know how you say it, Caucasians or white people are that way in this day and age. In 2016, I'm 40 years old. I grew up in a time where when I was a kid, I was the only white kid in my school. I went to Martin Luther King Jr. Elementary, you know, and at that time, that was when, you know, we were paying for what our ancestors did, you know, to them, you know, and for us to be and be 40 years old and have stuff like this still going on, you know, it's like, and like you guys said, this guy's a sports figure. You know what I think we need here? We need is another big sports figure, like LeBron or somebody that's in Cleveland, you know, to step up here and say something here. And I think our cops, the reason why we're having so many problems with a lot of bad cops, not to say that all cops are bad, because they are here to serve and protect them, but a lot of them don't take so seriously. They don't get paid enough. They risk their lives every day. They risk their families' lives every day going on the job, and they don't get paid enough. You know, our firemen, they don't get paid enough.
Let me jump in there, Dale, and say this. I agree, and thanks for your phone call, sir. I got to get some other people on. I agree they don't get paid enough, for goodness sakes. I mean, it's really sickening, because I know where some of these guys live and the kind of houses they live in, and they don't make a lot of money, and the wives have to work, et cetera. But I'm not going to use that as any reason why a cop makes a decision that he does. I don't think any cops are, hey, I'm not getting paid enough, so I'm not going to try my best to make good decisions. I think they're always trying their best to make good decisions, or almost always, you know, with the exception of those very, very rare few cases where somebody does something that is just completely egregious and illegal and they know it and they don't care. Those are just bad people. They would be bad people if they were bankers or if they were teachers or talk show hosts. They're just bad people. And those people exist, but they're such an extraordinary small amount of the total. I cannot imagine that their compensation would have anything to do with this. Let's go to Toledo again, and Cam is on ESPN 106.5, the ticket. Cam, good afternoon. Go right ahead, sir.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
I just wanted to say I completely agree with your comments on Crowell. It's something that in a nation that needs healing, you know, to see a professional athlete that's looked up to by children and so many people, you know, that need healing. You know, we need to, instead of taking the emotional route and saying, you know, Black Lives Matter, Police Lives Matter, you know, why don't we stand together? You know what I mean? Like, this is just going to make things worse. You know, and we're not.
I completely agree. And I think it's his status as a player that makes this so much different. I mean, anybody could have posted to something like that and you'd be like, oh, my God, what's wrong with you? But when you have thousands and thousands of people who look up to you, and as I mentioned, children who idolize, you know, a professional player like this, and they see that's the lead that you set, that's the lead they're going to follow. And that's how they're going to view things, that this is how we should treat officers. They're out to kill us, so let's kill them and then behead them, et cetera. That's the. His status as a player is what makes this the you know, the egregious situation that it is.
Absolutely. And I mean, you look at, you know, for example, look at their record with the domestic violence. You know, they need to set a mandate that this is not okay. You know, this is not, you know, like you said, if the roles were reversed, it absolutely wouldn't be okay. So why allow one and not the other? They need to set the mandate that this is not okay, and we do not want
They try with the personal conduct policy to say that if you do A, B, C, D, and E, you're suspended or you're banned from the league. And mm-hmm. you know, of course, there's usually a graduated step scale there when it comes to domestic violence, et cetera. But the problem is, and I'm not trying to create this, turn this into a big union bashing thing, but the Players Association, of course, has to agree to all of this in the collective bargaining agreement as far as the rules. And they won't allow, you know, a simple one strike and you're out. If you beat a woman, you don't get to play in this league and be a millionaire anymore. If you beat a woman and you're convicted even one time, or if you plead guilty, you're just done. The league, the union, will not allow the league to do that. And that is unfortunately the problem, because it would make some of these people who do terrible things, or in this case, it's not the same as a, you know, a domestic violence case, but it's such a an incitement to violence against police officers, it would make them think twice before they tweet, text, post, take a picture, or act if they knew their livelihood was on the line. And I think that's the problem. The union would never allow that.
Well, exactly. I mean, look at all the kids, you know, looking up to these athletes. You know, imagine if, say, a Cam Newton did this. You know, what does that set, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Isaiah Crowell, on the grand scheme of things, is not a hugely well-known player. He's not Cam Newton or Von Miller or Ben Roethlisberger or anybody else. If you got somebody who's a much bigger name tweeting something like this and millions of people saw it, it's even worse. It's even more egregious. But it's bad enough, and an example needs to be set here, I think, by the Browns and by the NFL, that we cannot tolerate this this incitement to violence against police officers, particularly when, again, these players, they live and work under police protection every single day on their jobs, at the facilities, at the stadiums, on the road. Police protection is there for them every day, for them to do something like this, no matter who you are. They have to set an example here.
Exactly. I agree with you wholeheartedly on that one, sir.
Cam, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. I appreciate all the calls we've had so far. People who agree or disagree, or agree with some of it, disagree with some of it, all been very, very responsible, respectful, which is exactly what I love about this audience, and I really appreciate that. I'm going to ask you to hold on, though. If you're on hold, stay there. I will come to you as quickly as I can. We're going to get an opinion of somebody in Cleveland who covers the Browns. Scott Petrak talks to us all NFL season long from the Browns side of things when we cover them. And we're going to get his thoughts on whether the Browns will indeed take the ultimate step here that many people feel that need to take, and that is to release Isaiah Crowell from the Cleveland Browns. So Scott Petrak and your calls on the other side of the Sports Center, which is coming up now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
When Cleveland Browns running back Isaiah Crowell posted a drawing on Instagram last week showing a police officer getting his throat slashed, we're not even going to show you the image. Now, Crowell took down the post, and then yesterday he issued an apology through the team. So on one hand, yes, we want athletes to be authentic, and we want them to speak out on social issues. But what happens when they say something that is widely viewed as offensive to their employers and sponsors and even fans of the sport?
Yeah, the immediacy of social media has allowed athletes with just a few keystrokes to have their voice heard on an important topic, but it's also so immediate that you can let the anger or the emotion of a moment take over and make bad decisions like this one. The issue for me, I think, is what the Browns did in response, which is to say, we don't accept just an apology. Your actions need to be louder than the words that you use. You need to go out into the community and make people feel like you've earned, you know, forgiveness.
The cops have made some mistakes. Black people have made some mistakes. We have to sit back and be honest with each other. The cops have made some mistakes that don't give us the right to riot and shoot cops. We need the cops, especially in the black community. We as black people, we've got to do better. We never get mad when black people kill each other, which that always has bothered me. You can't demand respect from white people and the cops if we don't respect each other. There's a lot of blame to go around. I'm not going to get on TV and yell like all these other idiots. We got to look at the big picture. Let's work with the cops, because we need the cops, Dan. If it wasn't for the cops, we'd be living in the wild, wild west.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hey, another... it would be the opposite of a rare moment of honesty. It's a frequent moment of honesty when it comes to Charles Barkley. A lot of times, Charles' honesty goes against him and goes against his best judgment, and sometimes does not work out in his best interest. Sometimes it does. And that was an extraordinary comment from Charles Barkley on Dan Lebatard's show earlier today. You heard it right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. That is a moment of honesty, a moment of truth, and something that America really needs to wrap their minds around, particularly as it comes to the number of events that are taking place in one city or many cities across this country that spawn events in other cities before any of the facts are known in the original cases. And that's why we're here. That's the main reason why we are where we are. The tragic situation in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the tragic situation up in Minnesota. And when I say tragic, that does not mean that the police officers victimized the individuals who are now deceased. It's just tragic whenever any life is lost, whether the individual took steps that led to his loss of life or not. That's what the investigations are for. But when these tragedies happen in these cities, it eventually spawned into the Dallas shooter, Micah X. Johnson, going on a killing rampage, shooting white police officers simply for being A, white, and B, police officers. And away we go. Protests, cops being ambushed, phony calls to 911 being made to draw cops out to areas, then they're being shot. It's happening in cities across this country right now, ever since last week, ever since Dallas, in fact. So when you have this kind of tension going on in the country, for a professional athlete like Isaiah Crowell, or anybody else for that matter, to post something as unbelievably irresponsible and inappropriate as he did, essentially saying, yeah, well, then this is what I say. They're gonna kill black people, then this is what I say. And what he says was said in picture form. And pictures, as you know, pictures say 1,000 words. And his words were, in short order, let's kill cops. Let's behead cops. The Cleveland Browns have made a statement saying it was inappropriate. The NFL has made a statement saying it's inappropriate. But they have also said he apologized for it and took it down. So in the NFL's mind, apparently this is over. The Browns, maybe not so much. What are they going to do? That's why we bring Scott Petrak onto the program once again. Scott Petrak has been covering the Cleveland Browns for many, many years on the beat for the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram out there, Cleveland Way, and the Medina Gazette. And Scott, thanks so much for your time. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Bobby. How are you?
I'm good. I wish we had more fun things to talk about, like, hey, camp starts in a few weeks, and let's talk about position battles and all that stuff, which I really would look forward to talking to you about, Scott. But this is a different scenario, not something that anybody in the Browns front office or coaching staff, I promise you, wanted to have to address here in the middle of July. What is your reaction to what we've learned over the last 12 to 24 hours?
Yeah, you know, I think, first of all, just taken aback by all of it, you know. Can't believe that Isaiah would post that, and then, you know, then it becomes a reaction to it and how the Browns handle it. And I think they did the right thing off the bat. I know a lot of people have called for Isaiah to be cut instantly, and I understand the emotion and outrage. And I wouldn't be opposed if the Browns decided to cut him. I'm just not sure you need to make that decision in the first 12 hours. You know, they don't report to training camp for weeks. I think it's okay for the Browns to let it sit for a while, actually sit down with Isaiah and know where his head is before they, you know, rush to judgment on his future. But there's no doubt that it puts the Browns in a terrible situation as an organization.
Scott, I got to tell you, it's ironic that you you approach it that way, because if he had approached it that way, if America had approached a couple of controversial police-involved shootings last week in the same way, that let's not rush to judgment in the first 12 hours and declare this to be an illegal shoot, to declare this to be racially motivated, to declare this to be, police officers are always looking to shoot young black men. If people had just waited 12 or 24 or 48 hours to find out more facts of the case, we probably wouldn't be here right now, and Isaiah Crowell would probably not have been posting horrific images like that on his Instagram account.
No, I think you're right about that, Bob, and I think that's one of the failures of our society where it's at, is that we all rush into decisions and judgments and react too quickly, And it just gets exacerbated with the way social media is now and the instancy or the immediacy of it. Nobody takes a breath, you know, and I find that when I write some emails. You know, if you ever get mad at your boss, you get mad at somebody, there's nothing wrong with typing it and just not hitting send. You know, you can hit delete and you save yourself a lot of grief. And obviously Isaiah did not do that. And plenty of people don't do that, but that doesn't mean it's not the right way to react. So I'm not going to criticize the Browns for taking a beat just because the rest of the world doesn't take a beat.
Scott Petrak is our guest. Scott is a Cleveland Browns beat writer. And you're right. A lot of people immediately, and I'm one of them, although I didn't just do it out of emotion, like, oh, I mean, I thought, I watched, I looked, I considered, and then I watched these police officers in Dallas and these services that are being conducted for them and their families grieving the loss of these officers. And then to me, in a measured and considered way, I'm thinking to myself, this is a professional athlete who influences people, whether he wants to or not, particularly young people. As we all know, as kids, we look up to our pro football players. Football's a religion there in Cleveland with the Browns. And you got this guy who basically said, I'm mad. This is what I say. This is the way I react. You know, killing police officers is something I'm going to promote to all of these people that follow me on social media. And to me, it is so much more than just, well, it was a heat of the moment thing for him, because it has an impact on people, or at least it can have an impact on people for much, much longer than the heat of any moment.
No, that's entirely true, Bob. And that's why I think it's such a complicated issue, because on the one hand, it's horrific. And I think we should all be able to agree that no one should post that. And then I agree with you that professional athletes have a great influence, probably greater than they should have. On the other hand, as I'm thinking about this today, I'm thinking this is a 23-year-old who, you know, I don't know particularly well. I've talked to him 20 times. Does not strike me as supremely educated. And why are we looking to this guy? You know, if a congressman tweeted something like that, it would be appalling and he should lose a seat. But I'm not sure a 23-year-old tailback we should be looking for to have great judgment. Obviously, it was extremely poor judgment, but I don't know if we're expecting too much for our guys to have great judgment just because they run fast. You know,
the problem with that, Scott, in my view, and I'll let you finish your thought on it and respond to this, is that, you know, most, you know, say 15 to 23-year-old black males in America know who Isaiah Crowell is and are going to pay more attention to what he thinks about him than what a 45-year-old congressman thinks. They're not going to know the congressman. They're not going to have any respect for the congressman. They're not going to care. They're never going to hear about it. But when a pro athlete, maybe somebody they might have on their fantasy team or just plays for their favorite team, when he does it, it's going to reach more young, impressionable people than that congressman ever could. And that's why his responsibility, I think, has to be, you know, even higher than that.
Well, I mean, that's true, but he didn't have any kind of training. You know, he wasn't elected into that role. He doesn't represent all his constituents. You know, I mean, so I get that he might have a greater impact, but it's almost through no fault of his own that he has that much impact. You know what I'm saying? Like Isaiah Crowell, I'm sure never had training in public speaking or relations.
You're right. I'm sure he didn't. But I'm not saying he has to have training in and that he is, quote unquote, responsible for having that impact. But awareness is something that you have to have. And they teach every rookie when they're on the way into the league. They teach them about ways to conduct themselves. As part of that rookie symposium, they cover social media and the dangers. You're going to have thousands and thousands of people hanging on your every word, potentially. You doggone well better choose them wisely. So he might not have been trained in how to speak publicly or present himself, but he certainly has been trained in knowing that if you post something that glorifies, you know, the beheading of a cop, a white cop, by somebody dressed in black, you're gonna have some people that you're influencing in that.
Sure, and there's no doubt about it. And you know, you could bring up a million examples of other people who have tweeted almost or as irresponsible stuff that Isaiah did, or close to as irresponsible stuff as Isaiah did through all walks of life, and it doesn't make it any better what he did, just because you can find similar examples across society. So the next question is, what's the best way to handle it? Are the Browns wrong to keep him around for, you know, let's say they make the decision that they're not going to cut. Are the Browns wrong? Are they being anti-police officer because they keep this guy around. And I don't know if it's fair to say that. And I also don't know if, you know, Isaiah took it down like a minute after he posted it. So how many times have we said something and looked around and go, man, I'm glad nobody really heard that. Or you heard somebody else say, man, it's a good thing we're not on camera on a tape recorder. So does that instant, I know it's captured forever. I understand that. But should that affect the rest of your career? And I don't know. And I don't know what the right answer is, Bob.
Yeah, we're talking to Scott Petrak. I don't know what the right answer to that part of it is either. I don't know that it was just a minute insofar as it was up there long enough to get 33 other people to look at it, read his words, and decide I'm going to click like on that thing. And that's sure. that to me is it's too long. It's already way too long. If 33 other people, because if unless he's LeBron and he's got 29 million Twitter followers or whatever the number is, there's not that many people looking at it at one time. Does you know that 33 people clicked yes or like in a minute? It was up there for longer than that, it would appear. And then once he realized there was going to be backlash, that's when he took it down. To your question though of how should they handle it and should it be something that affects his career long term? In my mind, it should not just because of Isaiah Crowell, but this is where the word precedent comes into play, and it's something the NFL has to consider. I know they considered it when they tried to ban Ray Rice the second time around, as they botched that entire thing for a full season or whatever the heck they were trying to do. And Greg Hardy started out with what, like 14 games, and then it was down to four because of the way the collective bargaining agreement works and what they were allowed to suspend him for. So they're right. Looking at precedent. They don't want anybody ever raising a hand to a woman. And one of the things they're doing to impress upon their players is look at how hard we're going to hammer these guys for doing it now. And that's where I think they have to go here. They need to let all of these guys know, especially in this very, very dangerous, tumultuous, you know, tension-filled time. We don't want to see one of your names on the front page, not of the sports page, but of the actual front section, because you got involved in a violent altercation with somebody. And these are the kinds of things that can lead to violent altercations. You go, promoting the cop killing in an image on Instagram. You are gonna, when you go out in public, you're gonna be encountering people that you don't want to encounter, and the NFL can't want that.
Yeah, and no, I agree with that, Bob. I do. And that's why I wouldn't shed a tear for Isaiah if the Browns cut him or the NFL stepped in. I really wouldn't. I think obviously the illustration was that horrific. However, I also think, you know, obviously we're living in troubled times, right?
Yeah.
Society is
big time,
up in arms, and right, everybody's troubled, and I don't know what to do about it. Nobody seems to know what to do about it. But maybe it's better for society as a whole if the Browns sit down Isaiah Crowell and say, you know what, instead of making you in the NFL, making you unemployed, right, and putting you just out there with no job. What if it's better if we keep you in, we put you in touch with the Cleveland police, which he already apologized to the Cleveland police, and the chief, I guess, accepted the apology. And maybe he does a ride along for a week. And maybe he goes to sensitivity training, and maybe he donates everything he possibly can to the police athletic league. And him being around police officers for an extended period of time changes how he feels about police. And then he goes into the locker room and sits down with Duke Johnson. And the next time Duke says something negative toward the cops, maybe Isaiah says, hey, you know what? If you really spend some time with them, it's a really tough job. And maybe he goes back to Georgia and tells his buddies in Georgia. And that's how a little bit of perception's changed. If I expect police to have sensitivity training and cultural training, then maybe it's not out of the question to say, hey, let's train Isaiah Crowell to change his opinion. And maybe that would be a good first step.
I like it a lot. Two things, though, in response to that. One, I think the most important place for him to go after he did a week-long ride-along, and maybe longer, would be really in order here, so you can get a real full breadth of what police officers deal with. You don't know, particularly, you know, depending on the part of the city or the urban community or whatever where so many of these violent crimes happen. You really want them to experience what it's like for the officers to have to make these very difficult decisions in a moment's notice. But then don't go back to your locker room. I mean, that's part of it, but I want them to go to elementary schools because that,
sure,
to me, is the future of this whole thing. Too many kids are being raised in too many different aspects of our society in different communities to think that cops are their enemies and not their friends. When we were kids growing up, we used to wave to police, say, it's Officer Jim, that's Officer Bob, that's Officer Bill. and they're your friends. You're in trouble. You call a police officer to help you. And now they're being raised in far too many communities to think, man, why is he driving by here? It's because he's out to get me. He's looking to see if I'm doing something illegal. He's profiling me. And kids learn that from the day they can understand language, and they've got to learn differently. And maybe a guy like Crowell would be able to open some of their eyes to the realities of what police officers are doing out there.
I think that's a great point, Bob. And I did think the same thing. I thought it more of from a police officer standpoint. And I don't know how it works in the inner city. And I think you and I had a different upbringing than a lot of these, you know, a lot of the young black people in urban settings.
Sure.
So maybe at some point in our educational system, it stopped happening where police were just in your building for good relations, right? They just showed up to teach you street safety and traffic safety and to get to know you and say, hey, if you're ever having trouble, look for me. And maybe that's not, maybe that doesn't happen in downtown Cleveland and downtown Detroit anymore. So there's no balance to the narrative.
The truth is, Scott, it happens more than you think. It happens more than you think. I know a lot of police officers in a lot of these kinds of cities, and I can tell you this. They go out there and they spend time in those communities with young, particularly young minority kids, more than you would even imagine. But it'll never make a headline. It'll never make never be a story because they don't want it to be. They're not calling the papers to say, look what we just did. We just spent our lunch break playing hoops with, you know, a bunch of guys on the street. But they do that sort of thing because they're trying their best to say, look at us. We're not your enemies here. But yet, whenever they do have to do their jobs, and that is they encounter a very difficult, dangerous situation in which a decision must be made on a split-second notice, if they make a decision that results in a fatality, like we said at the beginning, you made a very reasonable statement when you said it's far too early, we can't have knee-jerk emotional reactions in the first 12 hours, but that's what everybody does. They're instantly proclaimed to be racist, murderers with badges, and suddenly all of that great community building we just discussed is out the window.
No, and that, Barb, I agree with that completely, but you can't ignore the baggage that these people, the baggage that some people carry toward police, right? You can't ignore that. And while in each individual case, the due process should carry out, right?
Absolutely.
But that just doesn't.
And it doesn't.
But it doesn't erase the emotional baggage that is carried into these types of situations. And that's when we see posts like Isaiah, which shouldn't be posted, but that's where it comes from. I think it's more than one incident, right? It's 20 years of feeling a certain way is provoked by this, and you're right. I mean, there needs to be a sense of calm. I'm not arguing that.
And there also needs to be more education, though, Scott, too, to be quite honest with you, because this 20 years of feeling a certain way is based on so much misinformation that is spread by the media. Because when the facts are all there and all of the statistics are added up, I mean, it's a simple false narrative that police officers are out there shooting African Americans more often than they are anybody else, or that they're out to get them. There are so many studies that have been done by minority groups, in fact, including the most recent one by a Harvard professor that says your 20 years of being angry about something that you think exists doesn't exist. Here are the facts of the situation. You've got to be aware of that. And we don't need to just debate all of that here, but I just want to point out that that is a part of this that has to happen. And again, that education or that attempt to educate is only set back by actions like those of Isaiah Crowell, who just perpetuated the, I think we should kill cops. And there's no other way to look at that picture. It says executing cops is, and I mean literally executing them in a racist-style beheading, is what I'm saying my answer is here. And that education takes a backseat to that.
Yeah, that's 100% right. And there's no excuse for it. And frankly, I feel like there's no excuse for promoting violence in general. In any situation, that's
Agreed.
The wrong way to go. So if you have peaceful protests that turn violent, that doesn't help anybody. Yeah, there's so much where, and it's not just overreaction, it's where people make poor, I don't know if they're selfish decisions based on either misinformation or poor emotions, where that's what I don't like about this whole where we're going, is that nobody takes a step back. Nobody tries to come to some kind of agreement. How can we make this better? It's all everybody takes their corners, come out fighting, and nothing's going to get better with that kind of thing.
So much of it is driven by the social media, like you talked about. If Twitter and Facebook did not exist in Instagram, would there be any reporters talking to Isaiah Crowell on July 10th? Would anybody be talking to him?
No.
And if they were, because, this is like downtime. It's after mini camps and OTAs and stuff from the spring, and it's before training camp. And it's a downtime. There's nobody sticking a microphone in Isaiah Crowell's face without social media here. And if there were, somebody would be asking him about winning the starting job and Duke Johnson and how the backfield looks. Nobody's going to be asking him his thoughts on, policing in America. And social media is a big part of it, and I think more athletes need to follow Tim Duncan's lead, as Tim Duncan retired and was asked, how come you don't have Twitter? And he said flatly, I have no interest in telling people what I'm doing. And you know what? God bless Tim Duncan, because of all the reasons why we love him and everybody has respected him for his whole career, that simple moment of clarity, Scott, should ring in every athlete's ears. If you didn't have such a desire to tell everybody what you're doing, you wouldn't be saying things that are going to get you in trouble when you're not even being asked.
No, that's right. And, go back to, the athlete versus the congressman. Most athletes do not need a platform, right? They're not qualified to have a platform that reaches as many people as they do, especially on non-athletic issues.
Exactly.
Now, some do. Benjamin Watson is a great example of an educated, thoughtful athlete who uses social media, I think, to help society. Right?
But he's somebody, as you pointed out, he is somebody who is thoughtful, and he gets his thoughts from research. He studies. Yeah. He doesn't just use social media. He actually studies sociology. He studies statistics. He researches things. He doesn't just pop off at the mouth, like so many other people do on social media, athletes and non-athletes. He is a very well-researched individual. When he speaks, you can believe there's some sourced material behind that. And he, though, is, as you know, Scott, the very rare exception and nowhere near the rule.
Exactly. Not everybody has an opinion. Most people's opinions aren't worth listening to, and social media gives everyone access to have their opinion heard, and that's where we get into a lot of trouble.
I have to ask you one last thing, and we'll let you go, Scott, and this is the elephant in the room as far as not cutting him. As you pointed out, there might be a better way to do it. And that is, put them on ride-alongs, et cetera, and then have them educate the public and kids, et cetera, which is fine. But the elephant in the room here when it comes to this racial issue in this country is, would that be a suggestion that would be offered to a white player in a reverse situation? Because I think almost everybody would agree if a white football player for the Browns or the Lions or anybody else had posted on Instagram a picture of somebody in white lynching a black man, or cutting a black man's head off, like that white police officer was in that image, that person is going to be cut immediately, probably banned from the league on the personal conduct policy thing, probably brought up on hate crime charges, and would be rightfully so, because it would be so egregious. And nobody would be saying, well, let's let him have some ride-alongs and learn a little bit more about communities he doesn't know. They would just be done with him, and from that vantage point, would the Browns be hypocritical if they didn't do the same thing here to Isaiah Crowell?
Yeah, I get your point, Bob, and I don't know that answer. I mean, I tend to think your scenarios are legitimate. My mind went to, okay, we have seen occasions where I'd say white players are tweet anti-gay stuff, right, on social media. And how do the teams handle that? I'm not saying to the degree that Isaiah Crowell went.
Because I literally don't know. I mean, maybe there is, and I just haven't seen it. I literally don't think I've seen anything that is, remotely close to calling for the killing of.
That's what I'm saying. His is a unique situation because you don't see athletes tweet about killing people. I mean, that's what makes this, newsworthy and I think confounding for the Browns. I get your point, and I don't know if I can say 100% no, they wouldn't cut Joe Thomas, or they would cut Joe Thomas, or, whoever. You pick a white player on the Browns. I do think what's more maybe applicable is, I hear all the time, if I tweeted that, I would not have a job. I'd be fired. My boss would fire me.
No question about that.
But you're replaceable. I'm replaceable. In mid-July, the Browns aren't going to find a guy that's going to run for 1,200 yards. I think that...
See, that's why it's got to be up to the league, Scott, because that's what I meant. They need to show, that when I said before about the precedent aspect of this, they need to show these guys you are replaceable. I don't care. You know, if you're a 1,200-yard rusher, you are replaceable. Nobody is so irreplaceable and so invaluable to our league that we'll let you do this and let you get away with that and let you just completely alienate, you know, millions potentially of fans who come out here to watch our product every Sunday. You know, they have to let all of them know that nobody can get away with this. And you know what? I think maybe it's to their benefit that it was somebody a little bit less known than Adrian Peterson. Somebody like Isaiah Crowell might be the actual perfect messenger here that says, you know what, you can't do that.
Well, I get your point there. I do. Let me say this, and you might disagree with this. Maybe the NFL thinks this isn't going to be a bigger problem. It's not like domestic violence where we know it's been going on for 25 years. And we got to worry about, for however long it's been a league, you know, Jim Brown, we have to worry about our guys doing this. We have to set a precedent. Maybe they think this is really an isolated incident and there aren't NFL guys lined up to tweet something as obscene as Isaiah Crowell tweeted.
See, that's where you're right. I do disagree with it. Not because I think your point is wrong. I just think that they don't have to be lined up. I don't think Isaiah Crowell was lined up waiting for an opportunity to tweet something really, really horrific or Instagram it. It's just that when situations in the world happen and these guys aren't given reason to pause and to think before they push send or post or whatever, then it's more likely for that to happen. I don't think they're standing in line wanting to do something dumb. They're just going to do it, and it's going to be another ugly situation. And they will refer back. You know that agents and lawyers and league officials and union officials will look back and say, what did they do the last time this happened? And that will be the precedent, and that's why I think it's got to be.
No, that's a valid point. If it happens again, the NFL will kick itself for not having reacted to Isaiah.
Exactly.
No doubt about it.
And that's where we are. All right. Well, the Browns have got some time to think about this, obviously, and we'll watch it very closely. And if there is any news, Scott, we'd love to get your take on it next time around, okay?
Sounds good, Bob.
Thank you, Scott. Always appreciate your time. Scott Petrak, Browns beat writer, joining us right here on ESPN 106.5, the ticket on Isaiah Crowell. It's a tough thing to discuss, but you know what? This is what we are... I think we are tasked with this afternoon. There is a baseball all-star game tonight, and we would love to talk about it. And we're going to try to do that coming up here in just a couple of minutes from Anthony Fenech, who is live in San Diego at Petco. And before we do that, I want to give you something sweet on the way into this sports center, specifically the sweet deal of the week. It's a family four-pack of sweet deal gift certificates to Splash Universe in Dundee. If you would like to go, log on to 1065theticket.com tomorrow morning. That's Wednesday morning, 9 a.m., to pick up a $130 Splash Universe gift certificate for just $35. That's right. Or better yet, I'll give you one free right now. Call or 10 to 866-240-1065. I'll give you a freebie right now for four at Splash Universe. Anthony Fenech coming up. Hopefully some more phone calls as well as we continue.
Ticket. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, the extravaganza rolls on. We're going to take a timeout from the very heavy discussion we've been having all afternoon long about Isaiah Crowell and about race in America and professional football players and their responsibilities to fans and others. Let's go to baseball. They're having an all-star game tonight out at Petco in San Diego, and Anthony Fenech is probably lying by a pool in San Diego or in one, sipping on a Mai Tai and calling it work. What's going on, Mr. Fenech? How are you, sir?
Pretty good. I'm actually out of the pool right now. I'm in the field waiting to get into the clubhouse for the American League. Talk to the Tigers all-star Miguel Cabrera. This is a beautiful day in San Diego, though, as they all are.
I was going to say, isn't it always beautiful down there? They could not. I mean, if you're looking for a place where you never have to worry about a rainout, other than a dome, San Diego is about as perfect a spot as you can pick, right?
It's so perfect here, man. That's the only thing to say. It's very perfect here.
You know, I've only been to San Diego once, but everybody said, and it's probably why property values are so high down there, they said that literally it is the only place in America where the temperature never changes. It's never too hot at 90. It's never too cold at 50. It's always 75. It's always just the right amount of sun where you're not going to burn and you're not going to shiver. That's what makes San Diego a perfect place for the Midsummer Classic, and I'm sure you're enjoying the living daylights out of it, again, while calling it work. Tell us a little bit about the American League team, if you could, and start with, of course, the Tigers representative that you cover for the Free Press, Mr. Cabrera.
Well, I mean, it's just one of those things where I wrote it in today's Free Press, but the All-Star game is finally complete again with Miguel Cabrera here. I mean, he wasn't here last year. And look, he's the guy that, you know, everybody kind of looks up to. You know, most of the guys you talk to on both sides, they want to talk to Cabrera. They want to talk to him about hitting and whatnot. He was just holding court a little while ago with, you know, Mike Trout and Robinson Cano, Salvador Perez, the strong Venezuelan contingent here. And he's kind of like the elder statesman of it. So it doesn't seem like these days there is an All-Star game without Miguel Cabrera. And the thing that I was thinking about earlier is, you know, look at this is Teófilo Ortiz's All-Star game. This is his last All-Star game. But there's going to be a day when Miguel Cabrera, it's going to be his last All-Star game too. But it's just good to have him back here because you guys know, I mean, he's one of the great players in the game.
Talk a little more about guys wanting to talk to him because, you know, it's one thing you're a star player like Miguel Cabrera, for example, and, you know, it's spring training and you got a bunch of young guys and, man, if I could get just a couple of words with Miggy about his approach to hitting or something, and it's invaluable advice. But these are the young guys who are looking up to a legend. But when we're talking about an All-Star game, Anthony, you're talking about other legends. You're talking about at least legends of the moment, you know, the best in baseball in the All-Star, you know, at the All-Star game. And you're saying that these guys, the other greats, look to Miggy for, you know, for words of wisdom or advice or ideology or what have you.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly the young guys, I'd say. You know, a guy that I was talking to about Miguel yesterday was Xander Bogaerts of the Red Sox. He's like, you know, I've met him around the bag a couple times, but he really wanted to sit down and get some time with him and talk to him about, you know, like hitting and what makes him so great at hitting. Wilson Ramos, he's a guy from the Nationals, his first All-Star game. He said he talked to Cabrera extensively yesterday after they got in. So it's just kind of everybody. He just like wants to be around Miguel. He's just one of those guys that you can really see when he's at his events around the other best players of the game. He really kind of lets his hair down a little bit. So it's good to see.
Yeah, and it really is kind of cool to see other guys paying respects. You know, younger stars, but still stars, paying respects to guys with the experience and the you know, and just the life, I guess, that he's led in Major League Baseball thus far. The one thing they can't get from him is his swing, though. It's a once-in-a-generation thing. Where's he batting tonight? What's the lineup look like?
The American League lineup, I've not even looked at it, Bob. Why do you gotta call me out on that? The American League lineup. But he's coming off the bench.
And that was kind of the question. I mean, obviously the starters are voted in by the fans. And usually starters at many positions will play two innings before somebody else comes in and takes their spot and so on. Does the manager just kind of decide that as he goes to your knowledge, or will they tell him, hey, you know, Mig, you're going in three, you know, top three, you're going to the field or five or whatever the case might be?
I think the way they did it last year was they kind of let him know beforehand. I remember last year David Price knew he was going to be pitching the third or fourth inning last year. And this Ned Yost show again, you know, as the American League All-Star manager. So I think they've gotten a little bit of a heads up. I did not ask Miguel when he's coming to the game. That'll just be a little bit of a surprise. But he's going to be coming off the bench. Just Eric Hosmer starting. But, you know, look what I'm rooting for. I was talking to Max Scherzer yesterday. I'm rooting for a Max Scherzer Miguel Cabrera meeting again because those two are real competitive and like to get after it. So
that would be very cool. That I hope to something like that can match up where they're in the game at the same innings as one another and he's able to step up. So what was your take on last night? 61. First of all, did you get any of those 61 that were launched by Giancarlo Stanton?
I did not. I was holed up in the press box.
I would have. You know what? When he was on like 30, number 30. I would have been like, guys, I'll be right back. I got to use the bathroom, and I would have sprinted out there into the stands, you know, behind left or left center field. Because my God, what a display! What was the reaction up in the booth?
It was just crazy. I mean, I this is only my second home run derby. Actually, third home run derby. Second in the press box. My third was I was in the center field in Arizona, but it was crazy. Just the audible sighs when he's hitting these home runs. I mean, it was ridiculous. Everybody liked it. And I watch, you know, Miguel and J.D. Martinez and Victor Martinez take batting practice on a daily basis. And then still did not compare. I mean, it's a big bright light sign. It's just a little bit different. And Stan really stepped up to the plate. It was just awe-inspiring.
I'd like to ask you what the ball sounded like coming off of the bat of Giancarlo when he was putting on that show, because you described that once about Miguel and how it sounds coming off of his bat at batting practice. But as if I heard it right or read it right, Stanton said he was using about, what, 70 to 80% of his power in his swing on those. He wasn't taking full cuts. So if you're swinging at 70 to 80% or 90% power, you know, it might not even sound as dangerous, if I can use that word, as you know, as the sound would be when he's taking a full rip.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing that's pretty incredible about it. And then add that to the fact that, look, like, when these guys play in the game, they're getting 95, 96 mile an hour fastballs. These are just batting practice fastballs. So it was just something to see for sure.
And let me ask you, Anthony, Jim Kushlin here, because I read this morning that they are considering using actual pitchers for next year's home run derby, especially, you know, what you just said, because it's always been true for basically batting practice, lobbing it in these home run derbies. Do you think that's a good idea or a bad idea if they decide to use actual real pitchers for the home run derby next year?
I think it's a bad idea, and I don't think it's something that's going to come to fruition because they're just, you know, they're just too concerned about these guys getting hurt. You never know. I mean, even if you're throwing batting practice fastballs, I think the teams are too concerned about the contract tied to them. And so I don't think that I don't know. I like the way they do it. I mean, it's cool when you see, like, you know, Corey Seager's dad, Jeff, out there throwing him batting practice, almost kind of thinking about, like, how it was, like, when he was a young kid. So I kind of like it that way. I don't think it's going to change.
You know, I'm sorry, just had a coughing fit right there in the middle. I apologize, Anthony. I agree. I kind of like it, but I also understand the thought to kind of freshening it up a little bit, because eventually the dunk contest at the NBA All-Star game got very, very stale and very, very old, and we know what happened. They changed it here, changed it there. Eventually, they couldn't even fix it. They got rid of it for a couple of years, and then it's back. I feel like, you know, if it's 61 for Stanton now and next year it's, you know, 70 for somebody, it's going to get to, oh, it's a yawn. It's too easy to do. We've got to do something just to kind of freshen it up again. And I think that might be, you know, their line of thinking there. Would you be opposed to it if they did it?
I wouldn't be opposed to it, but to be honest with you, Bob, I don't really care about the home run derby that much.
Really?
Like, you know, I think that, I think it's like kind of a made-for-TV event. And maybe it's just because I watch batting practice on a daily basis, but it's just one of those things that, you know, I don't know, spend too much time thinking about, like, what the changes are and whatnot. I kind of like what they did last year in terms of the clock, but I think that kind of keeps some guys out of it because it gets you so tired so quickly. And I think some of the guys that are a little bit concerned about losing their mechanics and potentially getting hurt.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a very good point. And then the other thing, last thing on the Derby, and I know you said you don't care, but it's extraordinarily popular, as you know, and I think it will be as long as this doesn't happen forever and it just continues and more guys start pounding them out at this rate and it gets to be boring for people thinking it's too easy. But they actually had to address PEDs. Rob Manfred, the commissioner, acknowledged, you know, the home run numbers in baseball and certainly, you know, the home run derby last night didn't exactly quell the notion that maybe PEDs are still a major part of the game or that juice baseballs are a part of this. So he made a point of having to address that today. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I was there when Commissioner Manfred invested, and he flat out said that there was kind of a bogus explanation in terms of the baseball game juice and whatnot. It's a product of the way the game's being played right now and then the way the hitters are attacking pitchers, when the pitchers are attacking hitters, stuff like that. So I don't have a really strong, solid opinion on it. I just think it's kind of one of those things that might be a little bit fluky this season, but it's something that's been creeping up since the middle of last season, and I definitely don't think it's a PED thing. But baseball's going to have to try to get it figured out because the home run numbers are up in line with the way they are. They were in, like, the late 90s, so a little bit of a concern.
Last thing, Anthony, and your phone's breaking up, so hopefully we can get one more answer out of you before it finally goes away. The idea of home field advantage in the World Series here, it could play a big role. It did last year. Obviously, you know, the Royals had, what, six or seven or eight guys or whatever it was, and they ended up being in the World Series. Now it's the Cubs' entire starting infield. They certainly want to win this thing because they have the best record, or at least now the second best record in the National League, and might go to the World Series. Is everybody on board that you talk to there, players and otherwise? Does everybody agree this is still a good idea?
No, I don't think so. I think there's a large faction of players that kind of, along with me, agree that it's kind of dumb. It's just something that, you know, like, I think an interesting thing that Kirk Gibson brought up was maybe having the winner of the league wins more head-to-head interleague games getting in. But just to me, you know, like, when you got Jose Fernandez talking about potentially grooving fastballs to David Ortiz, and this is something that could really change the impact of the only thing that matters in the sport, really, which is the World Series. I think there's something that's wrong, and I think they're kind of split in between the middle. But I think the players, if you ask them, I think that they would be more in line with having the game not matter as much as it does now with all.
Well, you know what? I'm glad to hear you say that because I'm with you. I think it's a terrible idea too. I don't like the idea of somebody's home field advantage being decided by a player on another team that's going to lose 109 games. I think it's stupid, and I'm glad to hear more guys think that too. All right, Anthony, I know you're busy out there. Have fun at Petco. We really appreciate you spending the time. Have fun at the game tonight. We'll talk to you next week.
For sure. Thanks, guys. See ya.
You got it. There's Anthony Fenech, Tigers beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, wrapping up a very, very different kind of a show that we had to do today. If you did not have your say and you would like to, tomorrow we're back, and we'll talk about it again if that's where the stories take us, right here on the Extravaganza. Stay where you are, because Mike Miller is coming up next. He is going to be live out at the Marathon Classic at Eye of the Meadows in Sylvania. So stay right here on The Ticket. We'll see you tomorrow.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.